And with that, I'll turn it over to Sarah.
Good morning, everyone. I'm happy to see you. You're probably wondering where I am. I'm in Rob's office. And this is so you don't have to listen to my dog bark through the entire thing. I'm not sure what it is about Zoom making her bark, but it does. I will highlight some of the things that are in the newsletter that you got on Friday. And that is, don't forget to send a birthday card to John Adams. Paula sent out an email about that. And Sally is collecting items for the Homeless Initiative Program. There's notes about the Brethren Disaster Ministries that needing volunteers. Take a look at the picture if you haven't seen it on Facebook or Instagram. Dave Thornburg's tree is completed. That's quite a celebration. It's beautiful, so that you can just see a picture of that if you can't go see it in person. So as always for this meeting today, don't forget to unmute yourself if you want to share for joys and concerns. If you're not using a camera and we need to get your attendance, just throw that in the chat so that Scott can pick that up. If you have any kind of changes in your directory information, and I know I personally had to go back and look at the directory to see if I needed changes, Scott is collecting those. We are not printing copies at this time, but if you request it of him, he will send you a digital copy so that you can have access to that. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this apocalyptic message today, because we do seem to live in a world that wants us to hate each other. Mm-hmm. We're afraid of these radical times and all these situations that are going on, but let us together gather around the light of Christ's candle to worship God and to be radical and radically embrace hope and the strength and to love one another in despite of our differences. I forgot to ask, is there a prelude?
I can sing again if you like, but you hear enough of that.
I think we'll pass on that. So join me then in prayer. Oh no, call to worship, right? Sorry, I really do have the bulletin here. All right. This morning we gather with an anxious awareness that our nation is choosing a leader.
After this, I looked, and a great multitude stood before the throne, saying, "Salvation belongs to our God."
We too come before God's throne to recognize that all our political passions come from places of deep care and concern.
All the angels and all the elders knelt down singing, "Blessing and wisdom, thanksgiving and honor, be to our God forever and ever."
We come to be reminded yet again that whatever our political affiliation, above all, we are called to love one another.
So that with devotion to our God, hunger and thirst may be eradicated from our world, and God will wipe away the tears from all our eyes.
Okay, please join me in prayer. All-knowing God, we come before you with our limited knowledge, seeking your presence in the midst of our fear, anxiety, prejudices about those with whom we disagree, and exhaustion from the toll that this political season has taken on many of us. We need desperately to be reminded of your promises. So imagine into us visions of multitudes from all races and languages gathered before your throne without division over skin color or birthplace or wealth or gender or any of those things that are set up to divide us. Reveal to us your compassion and providence and love for all people that we might learn from your example. In the name of the Lamb who sits on the throne, Jesus. Amen.
Uncertainty.
Thanks, Matt. And Scott has said he'll send out an email with this information in it as well. And again, if you'd rather have a card or a paper copy or something like that, just let us know and we'll get you one. It's not a problem. Our text for this morning comes from our favorite book of the Bible, Revelation. It's been a number of years since we spent a lot of time here, but we have, for those of you who've been here for a while. We'll only pick out a small part this morning. So Revelation chapter 7, verses 9 through 17. John writes, "After this, I looked, and there was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, from all tribes and all peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, robed in white with palm branches in their hands. They cried out in a loud voice, saying, 'Salvation belongs to our God who is seated on the throne and to the Lamb.' And all the angels stood around the throne and around the elders and the four living creatures, and they fell on their faces before the throne and worshiped God, singing, 'Amen. Blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be to our God forever and ever. Amen.' Then one of the elders addressed me, saying, 'Who are these robed in white, and where have they come from?' I said to him, 'Sir, you are the one that knows.' Then he said to me, 'These are they who have come out of the great ordeal. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. For this reason, they are before the throne of God and worship God day and night within the temple. And the one who is seated on the throne will shelter them. They will hunger no more and thirst no more. The sun will not strike them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd, and he will guide them to springs of water, of the water of life, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes." Well, I don't know about you, but between the pandemic, racial unrest and protests, now this tumultuous election cycle, 2020 feels like a revelation sort of season. Don't you agree? Last Tuesday, Tricia and I got around, we donned our warm clothing and we set out to vote, anticipating long lines and potentially hours of waiting outside. But we were up for it because, given the state of our nation, we believe the upcoming election 2 days from now might be the most significant election of our generation. And the whole thing seems rather apocalyptic, if you ask me, because if you've turned on your television lately, at least broadcast television, not streaming, then you, like me, have been bombarded by political ads, each declaring doomsday scenarios. Political ads that claim if this person is elected, they'll eliminate the police and destroy the suburbs, and rioting and looting will spread throughout the cities and towns of America. While the other side warns that if their opponent is elected, the current pandemic will run rampant, and millions of Americans will lose their health insurance as the death toll due to COVID continues to rise. And the images they show to support their claims are nothing short of eschatological. And we can't help but be influenced by them, even if we disagree with them, because they inevitably color our perception of the world. And they spur in us a panic about what the future might hold. But as Tricia and I stood in line for about 2.5 hours altogether, I looked at all the people around us. The black man behind us, who was a great conversation partner as we made our way. The Muslim woman behind him, who chatted with us here and there. And even the redheaded Irishman in front of us who tried to correct my crazy ideas about other ways of voting than the Electoral College. And as we stood among these people, I imagined that these were the multitudes that were spoken of in our text for today. All races, tongues, and tribes gathered together with a singular purpose in mind, to speak out in hopes of making our world a better place. So it seemed incredibly fitting that we consider this text at this most important time in our history. When it comes to Revelation, it's often depicted as some perplexing puzzle that if we could only fit the pieces together just right, it might reveal to us some vision of the future. And it's challenging to many of us because, well, it wasn't written to us, but rather a socio-historical situation of political oppression and martyrdom that most of us can't even imagine. Not to mention the fact that the text is filled with imagery that is violent and disruptive and frightening and disorienting, and depicting in words the darkness of that time, requiring a use of the imagination that I think our screen-addled brains struggle to comprehend. And because it offers a forceful theological critique of empire, it's really difficult for those of us who live in relative freedom to comprehend just how devastating the Roman Empire could be. But perhaps what we need to remember most is that in Greek, the word revelation is actually apocalypse. And apocalypse doesn't mean the end. It means to uncover or reveal something. And while some believe that it reveals what the end times will look like, that's not necessarily how its original hearers would have understood it. You see, Revelation was written to an audience that had lived through turbulent times, times of political pressure, oppressive governmental policies, and repeated skirmishes with Rome's opponents that left the cities and towns and even people decimated. It was an audience that had fallen victim to religious persecution, whether that be between Jews and Christians or Jews and Christians against other social groups, or ultimately the Emperor Nero's attempt to crush both through tyranny and destruction. It was an audience that saw cosmic harbingers rise from the earth itself, from droughts that left the earth parched, barren, and unwilling to put forth food, to earthquakes that devastated Asia in the 60s, to the eruption of Mount Vesuvius in 79, which buried Pompeii in ash, blotting out the sun and turning the sky dark for days on end, all of which left the early faith community asking, who is in charge, Caesar or God? Because on one hand, Revelation depicts very well the fear and anxiety of the early Christians, and now adherence to their faith seem to put them in direct conflict with both the political and cosmological powers of the day. But at the same time, in naming the people's fears and depicting them through imagery, Revelation wasn't written to scare its audience, but to comfort a people who had already experienced the fear and anxiety that had brought them to this place. So it was So it was revealing to them the promise that God was still in charge and that God still had a plan for the future. In this way, Revelation is protest literature. Because while Pax Romana, the peace of Rome, proclaims the emperor is the source of all prosperity, health, and safety, Revelation declares that salvation belongs to God, not Caesar, but to God who is seated on the throne and to the Lamb. As an apocalyptic text, its function is to counter the Roman imperial worldview and reveal, instead, a God-centered vision with the power to confront oppression, injustice, and inhumanity. And in doing so, Revelation reveals the sort of false religion, which is rooted in idolatry of power and prosperity, and shows how even true religion can become compromised by idolatries, which effectively betray the truth of God. Unlike much of Revelation, the text that we read for this morning is a text of hope in the midst of a much darker reality. And while some have suggested that it's so contrary to its context that perhaps it wasn't even part of the original text, at the same time, in the midst of scrolls and seals and censers, trumpets and beasts and dragons, bowls and plagues and harlots, I would think that anyone could use a little hope. So John writes to his community, revealing that even in the midst of their confusion and anxiety and fear about the world to come, God still had a plan for the future. And the vision John describes is of countless people from every nation, tribe, and tongue gathered around God's throne as they join with the angels and the elders and all of creation in singing God's praises. But John isn't just making some flippant promise here. He knows the turmoil and terror that his people have had to suffer. He knows how the Roman government has persecuted and oppressed his people. But at the same time, it's almost as if John himself is amazed and perplexed by his own vision. Because when he asks the elder, who are all these people? I think he's astounded at the sheer number of people included in God's salvation. As the elder explains, these are the ones who have come through, who have endured atrocities beyond imagination, and who have found themselves cleansed by Jesus, the sacrificial lamb. And having come through, they awaken to a new reality, a reality that is governed by God, and a reality in which no one will go hungry and no one will be thirsty, because God will guide them to living springs. And because God is on the throne and not Caesar, every tear, every bit of sadness and mourning, every recollection of violence and its abuse, and all the fear and anxiety of the world as we know it, will be wiped away. While Revelation wasn't written to us, that doesn't mean it holds no value for us today. As we look around our world, we see the devastation that our racism has caused. We see the distress of the poor and oppressed in our world. And we see the contrasting realities of American empire over against who God calls us to be. So we must recognize our tendency to succumb to the dominant powers, legitimizing the status quo and allowing the saints, that's you and me, to ignore our responsibility to care for the earth and all its people. Because not only does Revelation challenge us to live into God's vision, it challenges us to live out God's vision for the world, so that every tribe and nation and tongue are lifted into God's presence, where there's no hunger, no thirst, and no tears. And while from time to time, we too are likely to become dismayed and wonder, where is God in all of this? Revelation can remind us that when we gather together in person or even virtually to sing God's praises, we can be reassured that God is still at work, no matter how dark it might seem. We have a few minutes. If anyone has any comments or questions, or we can take about 5 minutes for discussion, I think. Well, thank you all for joining us this morning. It's good to see so many of your faces and to have so many of us gathered together in spirit, if not in person and place. So as you depart from this virtual world and return to your real world, a world that's fraught right now with division and suspicion, remember to be the light of God's love in the midst of our chaos, that we can always know that gathered around our faith and our faith community, we find the strength to pray that our world will find a better place. Amen. Depart. Judy had asked about what I have up on my screen. Scott, why don't you put it up on this one? Sorry. I'm catching him off guard. For those of you who know, the scene that is pictured in my camera on my computer is of the first. It's the end of the first Planet of the Apes. And Judy was saying she didn't understand it, which I suppose I could understand. But after having stumbled upon a world where apes, ape-like humans, human-like apes are running the world, Charlton Heston flees at the end, only to stumble upon this scene. Yeah, this scene, the Statue of Liberty. So what it means is that he is actually in a far distant future in which the United States has been destroyed. And so he's at the place that the Statue of Liberty would have been. So it's a very apocalyptic ending. I don't know if that helps you, Judy.
Makes it more confusing, I think.
Say what? So that was the apocalyptic image that I chose and that Scott and I had been talking about a good portion this week. Okay, you can put it up. I don't care. Oh, the clip? No, that's all right. That's